Welcome to Foreman Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, I know that you are just cooped up in your farmhouse
yes.
with about 1,415 cookbooks.
I am. That's funny.
And a lot of pots.
You've
never counted them,
pots,
have you?
Pots, pans, knives.
I'm just ballparking.
Yeah.
I believe that.
And a lot of tools.
You probably shouldn't say the thing about the knives in case you have visitors.
That's not what they're for.
It's the middle of winter and you're locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And,
jeez, this is a dreary story you're telling.
But it's a story of a lot of people right now. They want to be outside. They want to feel the sun.
Oh, well.
Instead, they feel a chill.
The last few days, we really wanted to feel the sun.
Yeah, and instead, they feel a chill. And they have all these books. They have all this inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you don't have the markets are not the same to go to at this time of the year to go find some inspirational eggplant or something. You know, you usually dig in books for those kinds of things.
The inspirational
so
eggplant.
So when you're at home daydreaming about food, what are the recipes that you're dying to get to this winter?
Well, I love cassoulet, and it's sort of a little bit of a holy grail for me. There's a restaurant in Paris called Benoit, and I just love their cassoulet. I think their version.
I'd like their cassoulet. You love their cassoulet.
I love their cassoulet.
I like it.
I also think they have the best escargot. Now we're going to hear how Tony feels about their escargot.
Oh, escargot is love, capital L.
Yeah, their escargot is the best I've ever actually had.
The cassoulet.
So I also
there's so many different
versions of
cassoulet.
Explain
for listeners, in general, what they would expect from cassoulet.
Okay, so it's cassoulet denotes the pot or the earthenware dish
Type of casserole.
Yeah, exactly. That's where that came from. So cassoulet is actually a dish, earthenware dish. And the idea is that you cook beans and basically meat, different types of meat, very slowly in the dish. And because this is old cooking, of course, and when women, you know, they sort of had their days delineated for what chore they had to do. I believe it was washing day, and this is very typical in the South as well. And since I've done so much research about Southern cooking, I've read a lot about how, you know, certain things are made on certain days in the South because of washing day or ironing day or whatever the different days were, work days. So on washing day, the ladies would make their cassoulet and take it down to the baker because the baker would work so early in the morning in the little village and, of course, had good hot ovens and were using wood to keep them hot or make them hot. As the baker was winding down their day and getting their bread done and sold, their ovens were still hot. So the ladies would make their cassoulet, bring it down to the local baker, put it in their ovens, and it would very gently bake for in those wonderful, you know, wood smoked environments for many hours. And then the whole idea was it would bake very slowly and they would not disturb the cassoulet. And they even talked to the point of that the door wouldn't open to the shop and that nothing would disturb the crust that would form on the top of the cassoulet.
That's a little romantic to think that the door wouldn't open on the
shop. I know,
shop.
But I love that story. So that's why I told it. And so you really do want a crust to form. And then eventually that crust is broken back into the cassoulet and allowed to basically form again. So,
well, the crust has some breadcrumbs, so that kind of thickens up
the liquid, right?
Yeah.
So you have to have liquid to cook beans, and tarbé beans were the traditional bean that was used to make cassoulet. But I'm sure they've used all different types of beans in different regions that would make cassoulet.
Yeah, tarbé are a little bit rounder and a little bit bigger than cannellini beans, but it's not a giant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a million miles from a white navy bean or.
Right. And I think, you know, as we adapt old recipes like this to our own cultures and what's available to us and our own needs, I love to use cocoa beans, which is a French bean as well.
Tiny beans.
They're little tiny, yeah, and I love that. And you don't have to do that. You can use any kind of...
You love cute
ingredients.
You could
use red beans or I wouldn't go so far to change it to something like a black-eyed pea, which is too soft and has a totally different flavor. But the idea is to use the tarbé bean. And then it typically would have duck-like confit. And I think
that's a garnish like when I serve that in restaurants, right? That's
Yeah, or
not part of the original dish that's baked all together.
The original dish had all different types of sausages in it, and
big pieces of the bacon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cured pork belly.
Cured, yeah.
That,
yes,
that sort of business, all riddled through with the beans and lots of garlic. And
lots of garlic. Well, and that's the cooking of the region. This is from southwestern France.
Yeah, that's the heaviest stuff in the world.
Mm-hmm. And so good stock, lots of different, you know, types of sausages, or you could use just one type. And yes, I guess the confit leg sticking out of the top of it is very appealing and is sort of a restaurant adaptation, as you said, but I think it's a good one because I just love having that duck confit meat in there with all the sausages and the big pieces of pork belly.
Seeing that,
but it's a great dish.
Seeing that stark bone and the crispy skin sticking out of there is kind of a carnivorous coup de grace, right?
Right. So if you were going to make it, just have some onion product, a good amount of. And I always tend towards butter poaching my garlic now. The longer I cook, the more often I do it. You don't have to do it that way, which would be just to chop the garlic and immerse it in butter and cook it very, very slowly. I like garlic to be mild, and it is a very good way to handle it.
People do. I mean, that's not the traditional, but people definitely do. They usually want a little punch out of that.
Mm-hmm. And so then you can just saute it in butter or olive oil or something with the other ingredients. But cassoulet is a great dish, and one of the nice things about it is once you have it put together, you just put it in the oven and you kind of forget about it and put the, you know, sort of buttery breadcrumb on top. And, you know, after a couple of hours or an hour, hour and a half, just kind of go back in, break the crust, just stir it around a bit and put maybe a tiny bit more breadcrumb on top and let it go for another hour or so and just let it be gently done. And then you have this wonderful self-sustaining dish for dinner. I mean, you don't really need anything else. Personally, I would make a big green salad that, you know, had a great acidic dressing and, you know, probably a traditional red wine vinaigrette with a little Dijon mustard and a good extra virgin olive oil and call it a day. You really don't need anything else. It would be nice to have the refreshing salad with something that's so heavy.
It would be nice. That's funny. I'm thinking about what, you know, like 150 years ago, 200 years ago, it probably would be more very garlicky sautéed turnip greens or something like that that wilted to be served alongside of that.
So what wine do we drink with cassoulet?
Big old monsters in the southwest of France.
Monsters.
You know, Madurin and, you know, the Cahors. Cahors is one of those wintertime, you want it sort of wines. The wine that was the predecessor is a famous red wine from the southwest of France before Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm.
And Cahors is the original quote-unquote black wine of France. It's the wine from the southwest from Malbec, which you don't think of being a French grape. It's one of the Bordeaux grape, and but you see it a lot in South America now. But that there's a very, very old estate, Jean Jouffroux's estate, Clos de Gamo, has been at it since 1110.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Since Charlemagne rolled through the neighborhood.
The
families were making wine in the same place. And that's about 200 years before Chateau Aubryon was on paper as having a name, which is the oldest before that. Aubryon, you know, is Irish origin. It was the place of O'Brien.
Got it. Wow, that's
which
cool.
Which is kind of funny.
Interesting.
A lot of the southwest of France have that mixed English-Irish.
I have a side question, Tony. So was Bordeaux really popular or expensive or both before World War II? Or did that occur sort of after World War II?
Ooh, that's
or
a
World War One.
I'll make very short a very long and complicated question.
Okay, yeah, just...
before the 1855 classification of Bordeaux,
mm-hmm.
Where there were things were knocked into growths, right?
Yes.
Basically, sort of like price tiers. First, second, third, fourth, fifth, bourgeois, you know, and then just Bordeaux Superior, Bordeaux, you know, all these classifications. That helped buyers, and it helped become more of a commodity wine.
Mm-hmm.
The English sort of dominated a lot of the wine trade, especially the Bordeaux trade coming from that area. They were, you know, the shippers around the world of a lot of stuff, and also obviously back to Britain, or to the wealthy northern parts of Europe. And you see the British influence on the commerce of it. But it's funny, Bordeaux was not as popular or well-known as Cahors, the other wine that I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
for a long time. The problem was silt. There are two rivers, the Garonne and the Lot. The Lot River silted up over time, and the bigger ships couldn't get down
oh, that's
the river.
Okay.
when they couldn't get bigger ships down there to take bigger shipments of wine, mm-hmm. then they started going to Bordeaux, where they had deeper harbor, and getting the red wine from down there.
Okay.
It was purely economics.
That's interesting.
They drove Bordeaux first and dropped Coeur back into being kind of like a sleepy, obscure wine.
And that was around 1855 with the classifications? Or
no,
this later
over the course of the late 1700s and the 1800s, this was happening as that river was silting up and more trade started in Bordeaux.
Well, that leads me to another question, actually. So I didn't realize...
All these big wines, by the way, are to counteract all the garlic that's supposed to be in there, punch you in the face.
Right.
And Bordeaux is not necessarily the match, by the way.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's too...
You want something a little more robust.
Punch you in the face.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. So wine used to be shipped from France to England in barrels, and then they would bottle it in England?
You had shipping of cases. You had shipping of demijohns, or the big...
What's a...
The big glass, looking like giant Chianti bottles.
Okay, okay.
From the old day Chianti bottles with the wicker on them and all that sort of business,
mm-hmm.
the straw. And then you had shipping in barrel, and you had all different kinds of containers. You could buy by different types of containers. Most of the finest wines were shipped in bottle for a pretty long time from the late 1700s.
Tony, from talking about Cahors, would you be able to drink a bottle of wine that's 300 or 400 years old from a place like that? Or
No, a couple of different reasons. One logistical reason: a lot of times wines, even the biggest red wines, there were no sulfites, there were no preservatives of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes you might get a year or two out of them.
Oh, wow.
But they're meant to... Think about how big and tannic a young red wine is.
Yeah.
You know, and immediately fruity it is. Those things are meant to kind of like counteract each other. But that's almost all red wines for a very long time, especially if you wanted to drink wine from the 1100s. Yeah, no, they would not have made it.
Okay.
You could drink Cahors now, you know, anywhere from 4 or 5 years old till probably 30 years old is a good drinking window for a good vintage. Like 2001 right now is fantastic. 2005, fantastic right now. Cahors, if anyone is looking it up, is Cahors.
Well, with Cassolet, I mean, you really, talk about food needing wine. You need wine with your Cassolet if you drink wine. So
yeah,
the two are perfect for each other.
Yeah, refresh your palate and...
And have some more.
And yeah, exactly right.
Well, Cassolet is a great wintertime dish, and we definitely think about it this time of the year. And it's not expensive to make, so that's nice too.
No, a little time consuming, but honestly, it's not fine work. If you're not the great person wielding a knife, you really don't have to do all kinds of crazy stuff. You have to come up with a couple of kinds of sausages. Like, what do you prefer?
I like a very garlicky sausage and
like
a pork sausage.
Toulousienne style pork sausage.
Mm-hmm. Not something with any spices in it. It needs to be very clean from the standpoint that it needs to have good fat.
So this is not
good flavor.
This is not andouille.
No.
This is not merguez.
No, it's this just a good pork. I would do a pork sausage, and if you could find a lamb sausage, I would do probably both. And then I really do like the confit, and if you don't feel like going through that process, which is another time-consuming process, not hard to do because all you have to do is, you know, season the duck legs. You know, you don't have to do anything to them. They have fat on them. The skin, you know, it's in good shape, ready to go. Season them and immerse them in duck fat and cook them for a couple of hours until they're tender, and then that becomes a part of the cassolet. But, a couple of different types of good lamb and pork sausage.
And you need the bacon,
it.
Right?
And
this is not like bacon you buy in the store that's like
belly.
Thin sliced.
No, you want pork belly. You want a piece of pork belly. And I would cut it into probably 2-inch, 3-inch wide pieces.
Yeah.
You know, you want it to be pretty wide, and you want it to hold together while it's cooking. It's not something...
It's going to shrink
down.
You
don't want it to disintegrate. Well,
it's mostly
fat.
It's going to shrink down, yeah.
Right. It's got so much fat in it that you don't... And you don't want a lot of that in there because the fat will melt out.
From that pork belly is going to have a beautiful relationship with that breadcrumb when it goes back in there with the beans.
It is.
and that gnarly garlic, right?
Yep.
That's what's going to make you sleep at night through the long winter.
Right. And then the next thing I was thinking about was venison. So
venison cassolet?
And no, just a no.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, Cindy Wolf and all the deer, all of that and more on WYPR.